are back on the Cannabis Corner, and my name is Lucas Barfield, and I'm joined by my co-host, Uncle Dig. How you doing today, Uncle Dig?
I am doing great.
Oh, great to hear, man. And we are, like, getting rained out still up here in Seattle. You guys getting, or in Tacoma here, you guys getting any dry spells, or how's your weather doing down there in Oregon?
So we had, I thought I was going to go out in early May, and then we had a cold snap come through. But now here in the middle of May, I am out. My outdoor plants are in the pots, ready to go. We've got some trellising to do, and then we are going off to the races in the outdoor grow season. It's going to be great.
Oh, good to hear. And we have some great news on the Cannabis Corner. And I got an email the other day, Dig, and this is some really good stuff and some good news for the show and the listeners out there. We are going to be archived in the Tacoma Public Library in their special collections section as a topic that has not traditionally been in the library or represented in the library system. And I thought that was just really great news, and it was a really big surprise.
That tickles me to no end to know that you're going to be able to rent the Cannabis Corner on the audio catalog at the library?
No, it'll be something like if you go into the Tacoma Public Library and you search the word cannabis, that our show will pop up as a resource.
That's awesome.
It is awesome, Dig, because I tell you what, when I first got into cannabis back when I was 18 and 19 years old, and starting probably when I was around 17 years old, I really started researching and looking around for cannabis information, looking for things that would tell me about what cannabis was and something more than the drug war, reefer madness section in the encyclopedia, and you could read it and you could tell that it just didn't tell the whole story. And I went around, looked for information, and just could never find anything.
Yeah. Resources were really hard to find, when we were young, and they still can be hard to find, in mainstream sources. But I think over the last 5 years with resources like our show and other shows, and then a lot of really, really good like online articles have become available. There's people growing on YouTube and have whole channels devoted to cannabis. There's podcasts. There's definitely way more places to find good information on cannabis than there used to be. And so I'm really excited about the democratization of cannabis information in the wider world the last 5 years. It's awesome.
Yeah, so thanks to the Tacoma Public Library for having us on, and we are about to upload those files and get those sent over. Now, I do still have to sign a release, and as a blind person having to print a release and sign it, I am notoriously slow on doing that with paperwork. So as soon as we get that over there to the library, all that will be up and running, and we will tell the audience when that is all good to go. And I'd also just like to take a second to thank Suzanne Scar of No Mind Studios, and you can follow her work over at No Mind Studios on Instagram for our new logo. And I really thought she did a good job on that, Dig.
Yeah, it looks cool. I'm excited to start seeing that places.
Yeah, Dig, we got a guest coming on later. A guy by the name of Michael Sassano is going to come on and talk to us about recreational cannabis in Germany, and he's going to discuss cannabis in Africa and what's going to happen when some emerging markets come online when it comes to medical cannabis and adult use cannabis. And he's going to give his opinion on the question that everybody is wondering: can pharmaceutical cannabis coexist with traditional whole plant medical cannabis medicine? Stay tuned.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing it.
And now, let's check the news.
This is a Cannabis Sativa special report.
So let's look at our first news story, and that is a story and sort of a warning going out by the Federal Drug Administration, and that is on cannabis-laced candy lookalikes, things like Cocoa Pebbles and Nerd String. Is that right? Is that how you
Nerd's
say it?
Rope.
Nerd's Rope. Okay. See, yeah. I don't eat a lot of this stuff, so I don't really know. Sorry, I'm sounding really old right now. But yeah, and I don't want to promote those brands, but these are the examples they gave in the article. But they're just saying, hey, parents, watch out for this stuff that your kids don't eat it, which seems a little odd to me since the parents are the ones buying it, Dig.
Yeah, I think this is a little misguided by the FDA, but I think a lot of people can sometimes bring stuff into their homes that they don't maybe fully understand, and their kids can get a hold of it. Right now, if your kid ingests an edible, that's not good. It's not good for them. It's not good for you. It can cause some pretty heavy psychiatric problems during the duration of the active time in the edible, and your child may require psychiatric care afterward. Children aren't finished developing yet, so cannabis can do unfortunate things to their minds sometimes.
And in this case, the FDA says over the year, April to April, they received 100 cases of adults or children ingesting too much cannabis and having to be admitted to the ER or calling for help. And 7 of those were of these so-called candy look-alike types. So it's not like a scourge on the United States, but it is something to be aware of. And I always just tell folks that when I was teaching a class over at Tacoma Community College, one of the lessons that I would teach was on this topic. I did a fair amount of reading up on it and everything, is just keep your cannabis up out of the reach of small kids. And then when your kids get older, you really need to educate and talk to them and keep it open to discussion on what cannabis is. And then also keep it put away, because teenagers are known to kind of get into stuff they might not need to dig.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And they don't all often look too close at what it is they're eating, you know. And this is where I understand that the FDA probably has this idea that they're being informational. But I want people to understand that this isn't a reason to panic. Like, if something bad like this happens, you need to make sure that your child is drinking enough water. And you need to sit with them and make sure they're okay. What you don't want to do is start freaking out and start getting angry where the child can see you, because they're not in a state where they can deal with anything right now. You're going to have to deal with whatever the disciplinary thing is or whatever the problem is later. You're just going to want to take care of them and be supportive. Because they're in a very fragile state.
Yeah, so that is the first thing to do that we say, is to really try to calm the situation down. Because if a kid is really high on THC, it is going to be a very big shock to their system. So really calm the situation down. And then the FDA, in their warning, gives a couple other things to do, which is to contact your health provider. Then if you can't do that, contact poison control. They'll give you some things to do. And then finally, as a last resort, if you really need to, contact 911 and take the kid to the emergency room. And I have kids, and I took too much THC at one time, and I can't even imagine being a kid or having a small kid and having taken too much THC. So parents, be real careful out there with your THC.
Yeah, and remember, your children are your responsibility, not anyone else's. So, you know, do a little recon if you're going to go to your dumb hippie brother's house, you know, and look around before you let your kids run around. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you have to be careful. I'm seeing a lot of these stories. There was one just out of California you can find. People might have seen it out there. The kids ate some THC Cheetos, and they were sent to the hospital. So,
oh, my.
Yeah, so yeah, if you're...
I'm sorry, that's just... the thought of THC-laced Cheetos doesn't appeal to me. I find it humorous. It's gross.
So our next article is down in Miami, and this is a story that seems a little odd to me, seeing as Florida passed medical cannabis 6 years ago, and Miami traditionally has always been known as sort of a cannabis hub. There was a really big case out of the early 1980s where a man was bringing in like 50,000 pounds into Miami a year or something like that. Just crazy amounts of cannabis from South America. So Miami's been known as a hub for cannabis, but now they are just getting their first dispensary license, Dick.
Yeah. I think this is a long time coming, and I think it shows that when people try to resist state legalization, when enough people want it, you just kind of have to force the government's hand. This is probably a result of a lot of pressure on the city council from their constituents. And sometimes that's what it takes, because a lot of times these people aren't comfortable. And this is still like a very uninviting, securitized cannabis system. They're talking about making it as much like a pharmacy as they can. And I don't know if I like that.
Yeah. And the vote was 3-2, 3-4 and 2 against. And the first license went to a dispensary called MRC 44, and they had actually sued the city to get their cannabis license, but the city said no. A judge said that Miami had to give them their license because Miami never did outright ban the cannabis dispensary. So really good news out of Miami, but it's only one dispensary in a city that size, Zig.
Yeah, and you know, and I think it's good that at least they have one. Hopefully they'll get more. And it's good to know, you know, Miami will be underwater in 50 years, but at least it will be under high water.
The next article we're going to get to is a really interesting article and kind of gets to that how to roll back the drug war all the way. And that is, in New York, a senator proposed a piece to their cannabis regulations where it would be like community gardens for people that live in apartment complexes or high-rise buildings in New York and can't grow cannabis on their own. It would be a place that they could go, and I don't know how it would be set up, or rent a space or buy a space and then grow cannabis there like in a community garden.
This is such a cool idea. I know they're going to overregulate it and make it a challenge, but I like this idea of setting up a system that is already trying to address equity in that way. You know, we tout different state systems about equity of employment or ownership in the cannabis industry. But one thing we don't like to talk about is a lot of renters have a hard time accessing, you know, good quality areas to home grow if they want to. A lot of times their landlords won't let them, or they're legally required not to because they live in federally funded housing. But what this does is that this allows a person who doesn't have the means to acquire an appropriate space for themselves to have a place in their community where they can go and still cultivate, which I think cultivation is always better than purchasing your cannabis in the long run, both, I think, for the environments. We're using less fuel to transport it. And it's an additional mental health thing, I think, to get out in the garden and provide to yourself is very therapeutic in its own right.
Yeah, this is a really great idea. And I was telling Dave before the show, if I could have a cannabis business, this would be the type of business I would have, where it'd be a place that would facilitate these types of grows. I think this is a great thing. And we just wanted to mention that this is actually how a lot of other places' cannabis systems are set up. In Spain and in Uruguay, and I believe Belgium too, that is how they distribute your cannabis, is you join a co-op. So, and then you come and you grow your own cannabis and you work at the place, and then you get your quarter pound a month or whatever it is, and then you leave. And so, and that is how Washington State's medical cannabis systems used to be set up, was this exact thing where you could go join a collective in theory. Now, they all did not work like that, admittedly.
Right.
But there were some that did work like this where you could, and there, some of those are still around, where you could go join a collective with five or six of your friends and grow cannabis and then split it up amongst yourselves.
So right.
This is kind of getting back to that idea.
I think this is really cool. You know, one of the things that has always been, I don't want to say problematic, Oregon did its best. One of the things that's always been frustrating about the Oregon medical system is if you don't have space to grow and you want, you know, your medical grower card, you have to get someone else to like grow for you on their property. There's ways around this, but the most traditional way is to get a grower to grow on their, like give your grower card to a grower and let them grow your six plants. But it's always been like a private arrangement. There's no way to like team up or like, you know what I mean? And I like that aspect of a co-op or, you know, community cannabis gardens to offset that, and that way you can not be reliant on one person but go in with a group of people to grow, which I think is really cool.
Our last story is a sort of two-in-one story, and it's just in the column of how the United States is getting left behind in cannabis policy around the world. And the first one of those two-in-one stories is out of Zimbabwe. And Zimbabwe is in Africa, and they are actually going to try and replace tobacco as their main cash crop. They just signed a deal with Swiss Bioceuticals Limited, a cannabis processing company out of Switzerland to set up an extraction lab, and they're going to be growing cannabis for that lab right there in Zimbabwe. And in 2018, they pretty much legalized cannabis all around the country.
So, you know, this is really interesting. They've been trying to set this up because, like Lucas said, they've been having problems with their tobacco crop. It's going down in value, and not in many, as they're not selling as much. They're also realizing that they can sell cannabis at $25 per kilogram, which is five, even six times more than what a good tobacco crop can give you. The country's president is urging other investors with permits to quickly operationalize their permits. So even the government is encouraging the growth of this cannabis industry as a new cash crop. And I think a lot of countries with agricultural heavy economies that aren't as wealthy as some other countries stand to get a real leg up using cannabis as a cash crop. And like you said, leave the United States and to a lesser extent Europe behind.
Yeah, and it sounded like in the article that the country itself, so like the government is growing the cannabis and then this Swiss company is going to be extracting it. So that is really interesting how they're setting that up. And the other story with how we wanted to talk, what we wanted to talk about is in Thailand, this was all over the news last week, the country just handed out 1 million cannabis plants to its citizens.
That's so cool. I think that's really neat.
Yeah.
I'm kind of speechless by that. It's amazing.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Quality West Cannabis. Learn more at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com. And we are back for this week's interview, and this week we are joined by Michael Sassano of SoMai Pharmaceuticals Limited, a Lisbon, Portugal-based cannabis pharmaceutical company, and he is here today to talk to us about a couple different things, European cannabis, and what's going on in the world on the topic of cannabis. How are you doing today, Michael?
I'm great. I really appreciate you having me today.
Yeah, really great for you to be joining us, and I want to go ahead and get started with the interview and just ask you, how did you get into the business of cannabis?
Well, what I guess when I started, I was in my career, I was a banker on Wall Street. And then I turned into a developer down near where you're from, down in the Florida region on the panhandle there. And in 2008, when the market went under, there weren't many investments and banks weren't giving many investments. And we turned our attention to higher yielding asset classes. And cannabis was one of the ones that was emerging. So I ended up moving from Europe, eventually living in Las Vegas and expanding out from the Las Vegas area to multiple areas around that corner.
So I see that you sold your company Solaris Farms in Nevada, and then you started your company SoMai Pharmaceuticals Limited there. So how did your experience in the United States cannabis industry prepare you to work within the European cannabis market?
Yeah, so Solaris Farms merged with another dispensary group, the Sanctuary Dispensaries, to create the largest private double vertical in Las Vegas. You know, that experience from the ground when you saw the transformation on the West Coast, which started off in the medical area, quickly became recreational. And then you saw the advent, especially Las Vegas, where, you know, it's more of a marketing, let's say, play on cannabis, but a market that also has now reached up to $1.2 billion in sales with a very limited amount of groups. It's the largest collection of public companies in one state because the regulations are very clear. You know, this experience starting off on the West Coast, both for the quality of genetics and the diversity of products that we're creating, you know, this was a logical nexus to bring these products and those genetics to Europe. And as I said earlier, you know, I lived in Europe full time, came back, you know, just to do the cannabis ventures there into the United States. And getting back to Europe has always been a key. So You know, bringing that product knowledge, understanding, you know, where this market is and where it's going to go here in Europe is all a part of that learning curve of watching, you know, the explosion of cannabis over the last 10 years.
So I wanted you to discuss real quick, what are some of the major differences between the United States cannabis market and the cannabis market emerging in Europe?
Well, right now it's in its infancy state, let's say, in Europe. You know, some major differences is that it's pharmaceutical grade cannabis. So all the facilities are rated for pharmaceutical production levels. So that would be the same kind of levels as an opioid manufacturer, an opioid farmer, an opioid manufacturer, or any other controlled narcotic. And it's controlled as such, where the products that are made, the flower that is sold, is given to the patients by a prescription, and those prescriptions are filled at a pharmacy just like any normal drug. There are some similarities, though, similar to the United States, where you have 50 different countries with all different rules on cannabis. So, too, is the 27 EU countries. There's various rules in each one of those countries. So Germany being the leader, currently Italy being the second leader, you can liken these to early stage states and how they grow. You know, and Portugal being the leader in infrastructure with the most amount of grows and extraction facilities and export of product outside to the European community.
And you mentioned Germany there, and that is a story that we have been following here on the Cannabis Corner. They're emerging adult use cannabis in their medical cannabis market. So what will it do if Germany goes ahead and moves into adult use cannabis full legalization?
Well, this is a very interesting topic right now. The health minister changing his position from being staunchly against cannabis from the Conservative Party to now with the new Liberal parties in charge, you know, advocating, saying that the dangers of not legalizing far outweigh the dangers of legalizing. You know, this is a shot heard across all health ministers in Europe. Every health minister in Europe picked up their ears when they heard that. So, you know, Germany being the more progressive and also the largest country, carrying the most clout and respect in the European community, this is clearly a signal that is a lot more powerful than any politician saying they want to do this or that. This is the health minister who's in charge of the health of the German people, saying that he believes in the legalization of the product. You know, how that's going to look, we greatly believe that because it's the health minister is really looking at this, the quality of the product will still be EU GMP pharmaceutical. You know, this is a narcotic. They are not going to change. I do not believe they will change the derivation to a nutraceutical product similar to CBD. They will treat it as a narcotic. They will treat it as a controlled substance. What we might see other than pharmacy distributions, whether it's pharmacy OTC or by prescription, is yet to be seen. But we may see specialized dispensaries. We also may see specialized social clubs similar to what you see in Malta, what's going to happen in Switzerland with the 10 pilot social clubs, similar to the social clubs in the gray market in Barcelona, Spain, similar to what you understand as coffee shops in the Netherlands. There may be that kind of a outlet also yet to be seen. But, you know, for sure, it's something that's going to open up not just Germany. This kind of move is what every European country will pick up and start to follow if those cases fall. If the U.S. would have done it, these chips would have fallen quicker. But it looks like Europe is going to fall quicker than the U.S., and that's really good news. And there's a lot of countries, including Portugal, France, you know, that have all, you know, indicated or been on a political agenda to look at bringing the adult use market to Europe. So I think a lot of people are going to be picking up their ears, and Europe's going to be a fast mover, and it's going to really shoot out of the gate once we see the regulations come somewhere around this summer.
Okay, very interesting. One of the stories we covered on this episode of the Cannabis Corner was the story out of Zimbabwe, where the country is going to start growing and developing $27 million facility to grow and process medical cannabis. And they mentioned in the story there that they're going to replace their tobacco crop, and they were saying that cannabis is there is $25 a kilogram. I wanted to know if you could talk for a second about how some of these emerging markets like Zimbabwe, and I'm guessing Colombia and other South American and other African countries, how will these emerging markets begin to, let's say if Europe moves ahead and the United States follows, what is going to be the landscape with these markets coming online?
Well, it's all positive, you know, as cannabis sweeps across the globe, you know, Uruguay was one of the early leaders lower cost production. Colombia soon followed suit. Lesotho, South Africa, now Zimbabwe with an even cheaper cost to produce. Clearly legalization is a positive. Even Morocco went to legalize, by the way, in northern Africa. And, you know, from the, whether you're looking at the black market, it was always known that the Moroccan hash and the Moroccan products were much cheaper. It was one of the things that the Netherlands always blew back pushing forward with their 10 pilot licenses for a legalization product. It's really what's delayed it is, other product with better quality can come from other places than possibly legal Netherlands growers. So now that other countries are legalizing and providing, more cost-effective product, of course, you have to pay attention to that. But there's another side to it. Europe, even if it's products from, and let's take cannabis out of the equation, any product you try to ship into Europe, whether it's American cars or something else, steel imports, exports, Europe has a protectionist attitude towards its community and its farmers and its businesses. So it hasn't been, arms wide open for Uruguayan product and Colombian product. They've had a hard time pushing the limits. And you have local growers, the largest amount of local growers, 8 licensed growers here in Portugal alone, which are probably the lowest cost producers in all of Europe comparatively to what it would cost to cultivate in Denmark or Germany or even the Netherlands or any of the Northern Latitude companies, Guernsey, New Jersey. These are all high cost places, not just labor, but, they don't have the plethora of sun, the natural resources. Companies coming out of South Africa, are great. We welcome them as manufacturers. We want them here. But it's not as easy as you would think to get the products approved, and especially the quality standards of Europe. They're very strict on that. They're running it like pharmaceutical, although the flower has to be GACP. The whole processing of drying it or processing it into oils and products all has to be regulated under EU GMP pharmaceutical regulatory framework. And that's very difficult to do in another country. But of course, it's possible. And of course, we will be wanting to bring in the product at that kind of a rate to manufacture it and make other products. It's too early to say, what exactly it means, but I'm happy more entrance and more globalization is occurring.
I've heard you use the term GMP certified and cannabis pharmaceuticals a couple times. Could you explain to our audience what exactly you mean by that?
Okay. Pharmaceutical would be like your Sativex, Epidiolex. These are pharmaceutical products that have gone through trials, clinical trials, all the way from pharmacological studies and all the way up to human trials. And they have been approved by regulatory agencies here in the EU as pharmaceutical products that doctors can prescribe with specific indications. It's the same as any pharmaceutical that is prescribed, whether it be pain relievers like opioids or antibiotics. You know, these are your pharmaceuticals that doctors are used to prescribing. On another level, you have what's called medicinal. And it's a little different in Europe. Medicinal in Europe is more an herbal medicinal derivation. And it's a medicine. It's a medicine that a doctor has to prescribe and that you can pick up at a pharmacy. And it's with herbal elements. So in the if you look at the way they're looking at the flower or the extracts, the drops that are made here for the doctors to prescribe, these are herbal extracts, herbal flower, herbal APIs under herbal medicinal programs. Here in Portugal, we call it ACM. You know, these, all you have to, you don't have to go through clinical trials on these because they're considered common elements, common APIs that are used. And these products, you just have to show stability and quality. And then you have the U.S. medical, which was a little bit more of a novel foods application. And then, of course, you know, recreational. You can walk in a store as long as you're 21 and purchase cannabis products.
So when we're talking about cannabis pharmaceuticals, where does the whole plant, growing the plant out of the ground, fit into that equation of making those?
Well, it all starts with the cannabis plant. Of course, we don't have a prolific, let's say, semi-synthetic market where you can convert CBD into other cannabinoids or THC, do conversions on them or purifications at that level. They're not here yet. Also in the monograph, there's not, there's really no place for the cannabinoids like CBG, CBN, although there is a look towards these products and how to get these products, APIs registered in the market. But the plant itself is regulated and pretty similar in the United States, where you have, even though you don't have the federal GACP here, you would regulate it under GACP with its federal guidelines on proper growing of the plant. Of course, there's a narcotic security between the requirements of fencing, the requirements of keeping tags on your plants. All of those requirements exist, security systems, because you are growing a narcotic. And it is not unfamiliar to the European farmers to grow narcotics similar to the cannabis plant. You know, so everything starts with the plant. And, you know, you don't have biocatalysis here yet, but that's also hopeful for the pharmaceutical. So really all you're talking about is the herbal extracts, taking the flower, making herbal distillate from the either selling the flower or making herbal distillates from those flowers. So everything has to be derived from the plant in order to be registered under the herbal medicine rules.
So here in Washington, we do have the synthesis of THC from CBD and Delta 8 and probably some other things. And then you have pharmaceutical grade cannabis products like Epidiolex and other things. One of the big concerns in the cannabis community is whether cannabis pharmaceuticals like Epidiolex, like converting the conversion processes, whether those can eventually live in live together with whole plant cannabis medicine as we've known in the past, home grows, medical collectives, and things like that. In your opinion, what do you think about these two types of products living together? Because I just want to express the fear for a lot of medical cannabis people or legacy growers and traditional cannabis folks is that the pharmaceutical companies kind of have their eye on cannabis and want to eventually, possibly, you know, get away from the plant and stifle things like home growing and things like that. So could you, what is your opinion on that?
It's a very interesting topic. You know, if you think about it, the entire cannabis industry is somewhere around $30 billion in sales. Well, that's just one quarter for one company in the pharmaceutical industry, right? Well, at least in current days. You know, so, you know, it's still a relatively small market. Have they been tilting the scales a little bit against us? I'm sure, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, you know, is notorious for that. You know, but you've seen a lot of large buys, especially since in 2020, December of 2020, the United Nations voted to deschedulize cannabis to a Schedule One, or get it off their schedule as a and reclassify as a medicine. And that started a wave of mergers. So you saw Jazz Pharmaceuticals by GW Pharma, which is your Epidiolex and Sativex. You saw at the end of last year, you saw Pfizer come in by a San Diego based endocrinology cannabis application company. You saw Teva Pharmaceuticals enter in with the distribution company. You saw a German pharmaceutical company buy C3 off of Canopy. So, you know, these mergers were $6.7 billion mergers, two of them, those first two that I mentioned. So, you know, the merger activity, you know, is far larger numbers than, okay, maybe what we saw back in the day, you know, during the 2017-2018 Canadian rush, where there was billion-dollar mergers, or recently the Cresco-Columbia $2 billion merger. So these numbers are much larger, and they're looking, these pharmaceutical companies are looking for things either, I would guess, like Pfizer's looking to, you know, add more products to its chemotherapy suite of drugs, and have another therapy in there is my guess. You know, so doctors prescribing these drugs for people with epilepsies, these are people with, you know, serious needs, level three chemotherapies. You know, these doctors can't just ignore cannabis, but they have to also be looking at cannabis as a addition to their current therapies that they're treating. And they want something that has gone through clinical trials, isn't approved for it. This is no question. From the herbal side, Europe is more used to herbal medicines, you know, herbal clinics. You know, they have more, I would say the globe even has more of a look towards herbal medicines than the United States, where the FDA favors, you know, synthetic molecules, you know, and so get that purity of molecule going. And, you know, the doctors that are going to use those require clinical trials. So without these clinical trials, it's very difficult for them to say, you know, to prescribe them, you know, in a U.S. setting or not. Now, on the other side, from the recreational standpoint, the genie's out of the bottle. There's no way to put it back inside. You know, it's going to keep expanding. People want access to their gummy bears. They want access to the latest strain and choices of strains. You know, and that's and vape devices and concentrates and chocolates, whatever you're going to make. They want that. And that's never going to be on the medicinal herbal side. And that will never be on the pharmaceutical side. So I believe all of these lines can coexist in a friendly point of view. Will the doctors be less apt to prescribe an herbal remedy that you can go pick up at a store? Yeah, this is probably one of those. This argument can be made, but if you're stretching between pharmaceutical and recreational, those two worlds have to exist, I believe, you know, and they will coexist just fine.
So tell us real quick, what is on the horizon in cannabis pharmaceuticals?
You know, so there's a lot, there's over 250, I believe, THC pharmaceutical clinical trial programs going on at various stages. If you add CBD into that equation, that could be up to 1,200 globally. The two leaders in clinical trials is the United States, followed very closely by Europe. Those are your two mega leaders, you know, in the industry. I think you're going to see, and then you have some very late stage trials. You'll see some new drugs come off, not just the Epidiolexes and Sativex, which have dominated, you know, the world scene, you know, in the last few years. You'll see more indications being addressed, sleep apnea, other indications of pain, because it's such a broad category, whether it's chronic pain, fibromyalgic pain, post-surgical pain. You'll see a lot of unique indications that these pharmaceutical companies are addressing. From our standpoint at SOMI, as manufacturers, and of course our early revenue lines, are the herbal medicines. We'll be matching the herbal medicines we're producing in various different forms, whether it's drops or sprays or sublinguals, transdermals, soft gel caps. We will be matching these with clinics around Europe and KOLs around Europe, doctors that are prescribing these herbal remedies to treat specific indications, even sports medicine. All of these areas, we'll be designing with clinicians various products for them. And we've taken a little bit of an edge from the U.S. market, where instead of just products with MCT oil, we'll be creating excipient mixes that have considerably more bioavailability and faster onset. People want products that actually work and feel like they work. And the current, let's call it 1.0 of Europe, where it's MCT oil based mixtures. These take 1 hour to onset. This isn't really where people want to be spending a lot of money on. Looking at that race, there is, clear race going on from the clinical trial side as well as the herbal medicine side as to getting the proper excipients and also the proper delivery devices to go forward. And I think what you'll end up seeing in the European market is that there'll be a fair representation similar to the U.S. and Canada for flower and extract-based products. And things will, the different products will only get a lot larger. The product mix will get larger and the acceptance in all the countries will get larger. But I still believe that, even with the health minister of Germany's, go forward, he is a health minister. He's going to want this on a medicinal path. He's going to want the quality of the product to be top. And that's something that is going to work through Europe. And I doubt they will get to, gummy bears and things like that, that may be perceived as things that can attract children to it. So I think the medical products have to keep expanding and the approval processes have to keep going on because that's really what the global market is asking for.
Thank you, Michael. A lot of great information there. We are about to finish up the interview, and before we do, I wanted to give you an opportunity to let folks know how to get in touch with you, and is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, great, and thanks for having me. You can go to www.somaipharma.eu, S-O-M-A-I, Pharma, P-H-A-R-M-A. Keep an eye on the news. We have a few interesting mergers going on and investments into some companies around the EU community. Seeing that because we sit in the middle as a manufacturer, we touch base with the growers as well as the distributors and creating that vertical homogeneous track from the seed all the way up to the distribution of the product is really the goal of any company in the United States as well as us here in the EU. And we're taking that same exact approach, and there'll be a lot of news coming out over the next year as well as a brand new marketing for the product releases that are coming out this year.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by Quality West Cannabis. Learn more at thecannabiscorner840.blogspot.com. Now it's on to our It's a Bus segment, and this week we're going to Alabama with a bit of a different story, and this involves a business that was raided. It was a CBD store that was raided, and they said that they found THC products there But what was interesting, Dig, is they never said they knew for sure that the products were THC. They had to send them off to the lab for results. So the police came in and raided a store, and they don't even know whether what they took is the real thing.
Yeah. Pell City Police Lieutenant Jonathan Swiney said officers carried out the search warrant at Sky Vape and CBD. It's located, and it first opened in November 2021. So that's 6 months it operated before they decided to mess with it. But if anyone, you know, they're calling for people with any information to call Officer Swiney at 205-844-3334.
All right, Dig, and we are about to get out of here, and I really want to thank the guests for being on today, and I want to thank all the listeners and our sponsors, and I really want to thank you, Dig, and I hope you have a great week.
Hey, you too, man. See you next time.
If you have questions or would like to comment on the show, you can reach us at thecannabiscorner840@gmail.com. To listen to back episodes or to subscribe to the show, find us all across the internet by searching The Cannabis Corner. How can folks get in touch with you, Dig?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Uncle Dig, and you can listen to my podcast, The Bagseed Chronicles, wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you to Radio Tacoma and KTQA for their continued support. I'd also like to thank Aaron Foles for his production assistance. And finally, thank you for joining us on The Cannabis Corner.